This is Life, Death, and Taxes with attorney Steve Moskowitz. Now here's your host, KGO's Chip Franklin.
All right, we know the IRS will send you a notice that you owe them money. The next stop is when you don't pay it and they come to get it. That's called collection. I have a friend that actually owes $500,000 to the IRS. And the last time I talked to him, he didn't really know what he was going to do. How does that proceed?
There's a lot of things. First of all, normally you get four notices. The first notice is a polite, you owe X, pay up in 30 days. And about 5 weeks later, the second notice comes in, is that they've written to you previously. The third notice is worded a little more sharply, immediate attention. And the fourth notice is called final notice intent to levy. That's where they seize your things. However, there's some very powerful rights you have in there. And one of them on that notice where they warn you're going to seize things, you have a right to a collection due process hearing, but you must file for it within 30 days of the hearing, not 31, 30. That is tremendous because that takes the case away from the collector. That's the guy that's going to take everything that you have, your salary, your assets, everything, and takes it away from him. He can't collect from you anymore unless they allege that you've done that for delay. And then it goes to a hearing officer, which is a more senior person, and that's a much better place to be.
Let's go back a second and be chronological about this. Will this normally follow an audit, or will it be like at the end of the year, you do your taxes and realize you owe, you file anyway, and then they just come back and say you owe?
It's whenever you owe money. If you file a tax return and you owe some money and you don't include a check, or if you have an audit, anytime you owe money to the government.
All right. So the money obviously can be like my friend's case is, you know, $500,000 to, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
To $1.
Right.
Anytime you owe them anything more than 50 cents, they will send you a notice. And the other thing that's so important about this collection due process hearing is if you believe that the learned hearing officer below has abused his discretion, you have the right to go into tax court. This is so powerful because this isn't some collector that says, you give me everything or I'm going to take it. It's not like in the movies. You have so many rights. But what's so vitally important, the mistake that so many people make, is they get the notices, they don't even open them, or they throw them away. And what happens is if you miss that 30 days, even by a day because you're in a coma, that's it. You have forever lost your right to do this. Why in the world would you want to throw rights away? That, as unpleasant as it is, you open up the envelope and take advantage of your rights.
This is kind of like if I have a small business and I get a notice from the IRS that I owe them money. And
well, maybe you do, maybe you don't, Chip.
Right. Well, that they say I do. Okay, that I owe them a certain amount of money. Obviously.
By the way, a lot of times when they say you owe money, it's wrong.
Well, good. I mean, that's good news. I won't know that myself, though, right? If I deal with them directly, I mean, if I went to them directly and I said, you know, I got this business and I'm pretty sure I don't owe you this money. How does that proceed?
You're a computer printout to that collector. He says, Chip, you owe X number of dollars and you're going to pay it or the government's going to take it from you. He's not there to debate with you or explain or say it. He has a piece of paper and he says, Chip Franklin owes X number of dollars and he wants it. And if you don't give it to him, he's going to take it. It's your job or through your attorney, if you choose one, to go ahead and say, well, wait a minute, this is wrong. Okay. And there's a lot of ways to contest the tax because so many times that initial bill is wrong.
Okay, let's go to the end, come backwards. So I don't pay it. Do they go to my bank account first? And then if they wipe that out, it's not enough. Do they move against my properties?
Oh, there's all kinds of things. First, they go for liquid assets. So we'll talk about bank accounts, stock accounts, where they order your broker, sell everything, give them the money.
Can they just get into my bank account without a court order? How do they get into my account?
Very simple. They mail a piece of paper called a levy to the bank, which orders the bank to hand your money to theirs. However,
does the bank notify me that they're doing this?
Yes, and also there's a 21-day period that the money's held in limbo. You can't withdraw it from the bank, but the bank holds that money for 21 days unless the IRS says, okay, forget about it, give it back to the taxpayer. You have 21 days to go in there and say, wait, I don't owe this.
So that happened to a friend of mine. He goes to the ATM, and his card doesn't work, and that's when he found out this whole thing. So he didn't actually get a call from the bank first. It just, his stuff stopped working.
Oh, of course, because what happens is the money comes out and then you get a snail mail letter. Well, if they take it today and you go to the ATM today, it's going to be a couple of days to get your snail mail letter.
The process with all the fraud in the world and everything, I mean, if you get a letter from the IRS, how do you know that it's really the IRS? I mean, somebody sent me something in the mail today and it asked me to open up my Google account again, my mail. And I looked and I was about to do it and I looked at the top. And it didn't say, it had this, you know, bunch of characters I didn't recognize. Is that kind of fraud going on for people, too, that think they owe money?
The biggest fraud in IRS history is where you're contacted on the phone by someone says that he is sending officers to arrest you. They're on the way now. However, if you pay him right now, he'll call the officers off. That's the biggest fraud.
All right, let's go back. So if I don't pay the money, I know there's, I've heard that there's certain types of money, like OJ, his pension, well, in that civil case against him, they couldn't go after his pension. Is there anything the IRS can't go after?
They can take anything that you have. And with the pension, if you can take money out of your pension, the government can get it too, where pensions become more interesting. If you do a bankruptcy, a pension is an exempt asset. So the IRS could take it before you did that if you could take it. But the
Okay.
So let's assume you have a pension that you could draw from.
Right.
The IRS can take the pension instead of you. Just take it. However, if you declared a bankruptcy and certain income taxes are dischargeable in bankruptcy. However, a few months ago, the appeals court narrowed that. So some people can still do a bankruptcy to get rid of their taxes, but less people can now. Let's assume that you were one of those. If you have a pension is considered an exempt asset. That means if you go in the bankruptcy court and you say, okay, judge, I owe these taxes, make them go away. What are my assets? I have a pension. You get to keep it. There's other exempt assets too. For example, cash value life insurance. And then it also depends on the state. For example, Florida, and that's why OJ moved from California to Florida. Florida has an unlimited exemption on your house. So basically the trick was you sell everything, you move to Florida, buy a house, then you do your bankruptcy.
The bottom line is the IRS is not going to tell you any of this voluntarily, right?
Think of the IRS like a heavyweight boxer. They're not going to say, you know, when you throw your left jab, you drop your right hand, leaving your jaw exposed. They're not going to tell you that.
I mean, theoretically, though, they work for me. They're civil servants whose salaries I pay with my taxes.
That's highly theoretical. The, okay. The bottom line is it's a legal contest. A legal contest is adversarial. It's like a boxing match. The more for one, the less for the other. They're competitors.
So you say this a lot. Let me just go back because I think this is important. It's easier for me to deal with them while I still have my money. Once they take my money, getting it back is a much laborious process, right?
Yes, but there's a good procedure there, too. Suppose that's happened. Suppose that they took your money. And you say, hey, that's wrong. I really didn't owe that money. So then what happens is you have a two-year window. And under that two-year window, you can file what's called a claim for refund. Claim for refund means you asked for the money back. And they'll either give it to you back or they'll say no or they'll do nothing. If they give it back, you're happy. And a lot of times they do because they will actually review it. But if they don't or they do nothing, you have 2 years from the date that they said no or 2 years. If nothing happens for 6 months, you have 2 years from the end of the 6 months to file in federal district court or claims court asking the judge and or jury to give you the money back. This is a very good procedure when you don't owe the money, but the government's already taken it.
What interest rate are they charging me on the money I owe?
That's low. It floats with the prime, and right now the interest rate is much, much, much lower than the credit card rate.
Yeah, but it's compounded, right?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So let's go over these four areas again. So you can make a payment schedule, right? If you can, they work with you, like a tax professional like you and an attorney.
Sure.
They work with you with the IRS and you set up a payment plan, right?
Yes, but you have to be careful there because they're going to want more every month than you're going to pay them and you're going to have all kinds of things that you have to deal with. For example, in the old days, you went over the taxpayer's reasonable actual expenses and gave the government the balance. Then the government said, you know, that's too generous. And they came up with something called national standards. You won't like national standards, Chip.
Huh.
National standards is a very tight budget. So what we want to do, especially in the Bay Area, and what you want to do is go ahead and get a departure from them. And initially the agent may say something like, well, okay, you'll just have to move because your monthly expenses are too great. You have to give that money to the government and people have houses and kids. And that's another thing. Can the IRS take your personal residence? Yes, they can.
Well, back up. So I'm doing payments, right? So let's go back to the payments. So if I'm maintaining the payments.
You have to qualify to get the payments. And the first thing you're going to take a look at is, suppose you owe some money. It depends how much you owe. But they may say, well, wait, they don't want payments. If you have assets, they say, no, pay your taxes in full. So that's one of the other things you have to deal with is, can you get payments when you have assets, because the IRS office, they're called revenue officers, which are collectors, What they're supposed to do is wipe out your assets first. But a lot of times, wait.
Even when I have you cut a deal for me?
Well, that's why you need us to do that.
Right,
because
okay.
What the orientation of the revenue officers are, ROs for short, is to give them the assets. Assets can be something like the equity in your house. And last year, the IRS really started heavy-handedly going after people's personal residences. However, that's the only asset that the IRS agent can't take on his own. It needs a court procedure and have special protections there. They didn't used to press for it. Last year, they started pressing for it, even the personal residence.
What happens if we set up a plan and I'm true to it? Let's say the plan runs, 5 years maybe? 4 years?
The plan, no, it depends. Because on the one hand, you're supposed to pay off as quickly as possible pursuant to national standards, unless you get an exception to that. However, there could be 6-year plans. Now there's 8-year plans.
Well, let's just say there's an 8-year plan and I'm paying it faithfully and I get really sick or I die. Do they go after my spouse? Do they go after my business partner? Or when I die, is it settled?
No. So with your spouse, did you file a joint return?
Right.
If the answer is you did, yes. However, let's make it simple that you're a single man and you owe $1 zillion and you die. And you have 6 wealthy kids, they're all billionaires. The tax debt dies with you. They can't go to the kids and say, okay, you have to pay your daddy's debt. However, they'll look at the estate. So if you had an estate and the estate made a distribution to the kids, then the IRS will go after the kids, not for the kids' assets, but for the distribution.
Right, let's talk about offer of compromise. Can these two be combined? Can offer of compromise include a payment plan? In other words, can I go backwards, you guys figure out, and then I can do the payments on that compromise?
Yes. Now, again, there's different types of offer and compromise. One, and the most common, is the taxpayer doesn't have the income and doesn't have the assets. That's the most common. For example, you used to be a stockbroker, and now you have a minimum wage job, and you can't possibly pay. So that payment plan is just going to be, every month you're going to owe more because the interest is going to be more than your payment, but there's a 10-year statute of limitations on collection. Unless the government goes into federal district court to get a renewal, then they can have another 10 years plus a 10-year renewal after that. However, suppose you say, well, that's not the case. So what happens is you say, well, all right, something happens, you get sick, if you default the plan for any reason, then the IRS collector comes back after you. And what you have to watch out for is with an offer and compromise, one of the terms in there is you promise to be in compliance on all other taxes. Compliance means you file on time, including extensions, and you don't owe them any money. So let's assume you get an offer and compromise chip, and you're a good boy in years 1, 2, 3, and 4. And in year 5, you file your return, you've forgotten all about this, and you owe them some money and you can't pay it. The IRS will retroactively reinstate what they've written off plus interest and come after you again.
Even the stuff I paid? Not the stuff I paid.
Well, not what you paid,
okay.
But the part they wrote off.
Wow.
Plus interest.
All right, let's talk about hardship deferrals. First of all, it sounds redundant because obviously I must have had some hardship because I can't pay my taxes. Unless
not necessarily.
All right, you're right. I could have gone taking vacations and
a
I should have put that
do.
Money back in the business. All right. But a hardship deferral by definition is what?
Usually it's somebody that can't pay, oftentimes for compassionate reasons, like they're real old, they're sick, or you have a situation where somebody does have some assets, but they say, look, they need to use the money to buy their medicine or they'll die. That's what a hardship deferral is all about.
And I know a story about a person, stage 4 pancreatic cancer. IRS didn't care. They just kept coming. And so it seems to me that, like, when you're really, really sick, if you have a disease, maybe you don't have a death date in sight, but you're really sick, that would fall under this. And what
kind of
deal would they give you?
Unfortunately, that's been a big change. A few years ago, if you were stage 4, that was just a get out of jail free card. They just leave you alone. Now they're going after people. We have stories where somebody's doctor said they were going to die within half a year, and the taxpayer asked, oh, just let me stay in the house. And no, they want it now. They've gotten very, very aggressive. Now, again, I'm not talking about every IRS guy, which you have to remember the IRS. It's a large group of people, doctors, lawyers, engineers, whatever. You have some that are doing things they shouldn't. You have some that are really nice, and most of them are in between doing the job. But again, think of them like cops. Most cops won't shoot you on a traffic stop, but there is the guy that'll do that, and that's the guy that special action has to be taken.
All right, so I haven't paid taxes, and I know the IRS is going to contact me. Is it better to start bankruptcy before I hear from them and try to settle all that? And can they go through that wall, that veil of bankruptcy, and still get me?
All right. Now, first of all, in order to do bankruptcy, it must be more than 3 years past the original due date or 2 years late filed, whichever's later. The return itself must not be fraudulent. And if the government, and this is very common, where when you don't file the return, there's two punishments. There's a criminal one. The government can put you in prison for 1 year for every year you don't file with a statute of limitations of 6 years. Or what they do very, very commonly is something called an SFR. SFR stands for substitute for return. They make up a return, and that's what the appeals court went and said, okay, because the Justice Department challenged the bankruptcy laws, and they said they were too taxpayer-friendly. And the appeals court here in San Francisco agreed with the Justice Department, and they narrowed it. So if the IRS has done that to you, then what happens is the position of the court was you can't have bankruptcy ever. For example, you have to file the returns. And what's happened is they've taken the position that if you file the return late like that, it's not eligible for bankruptcy. Again, that's something that as of a few months ago.
I know a subcontractor here in the Bay Area who had deals. This is back in 2007, right before the world changed. And he was working with five general contractors, and they all stiffed him. Four of the five went under. And of course,
very common.
Yeah. So he has all these people that he has to pay, that he's paid. He's getting sued. He can't pay his bills, and he can't pay his taxes because he's taken a lot of this money, putting it out on the line, you know, for these jobs, and he's not going to get it back. Is that a hardship case? Is that a bankruptcy case? Is that what would you?
First of all, there's different kinds of taxes. There's income taxes. Qualified income taxes are dischargeable in bankruptcy, and there's payroll taxes. Payroll taxes have never been dischargeable in bankruptcy. Payroll taxes is where, suppose you come to work for me and your pay is $100, and the boss says, well, okay, here's your check for $75. The government is expecting you to take that $25 you've withheld and pay it over to them. If the businessman doesn't do that, that is very, very serious. And the government now is pursuing it. This started within the past year. Criminal cases, actually putting people in prison. And you may say, well, wait a minute. I thought there was no debtor's prison in the United States. How could that be? You owe money and you go to prison. The IRS position is you've stolen from the government. You're not going on debtor's prison. You're going for theft.
Yeah, nobody on Wall Street's going to jail, though. It's just like regular people, right?
Once again, there's all different types of people that
well,
may go to prison.
Well, I just remember from 2008.
Big Wall Streeters that went. Look at some of the guys in New York.
Milken and those guys, yeah.
Not just Milken, but some of the traders. The government's become extremely aggressive, and they're going after all kinds of business people.
So let me recap that one more time. So I'm a subcontractor. I did nothing wrong. I heard a story about after 9/11 in a case where the government wasn't even paying the subcontractors.
That didn't stop the IRS. The IRS still went after me. And here's the problem. There's a big difference between income taxes and payroll taxes. Suppose we have the chip construction company, and you go ahead, you have your workers, and nobody pays you. Since you have no income, from this source, you have no income taxes. However, you've still paid your workers. And where a lot of people make a mistake is they pay what's called net payroll. So that employee that was getting $100, you only give them the $75. You still owe $25 of payroll taxes. And you say, but you don't have any money. The government doesn't care. From the government's point of view, you withheld the $25 from the employee. It's supposed to be held in trust, but you didn't hold it in trust. You spent it for your own purposes. They don't want to hear that guy didn't pay.
IRS doesn't care that I want to put food in my kid's mouth. I got to pay them first.
That is what the law is, yes.
Steve, let me tell you a story about a friend of mine who, and I have a lot of friends who are independent, either contractors or subcontractors.
They're the ones who get the most tax trouble.
Yeah, well, this one friend of mine had like four businesses. And he had partners in each of the businesses. And, of course, we've talked about this in the past. A couple of other partners got in tax trouble. And so the IRS came to him. And now he happened to have a tax situation, too. And he's older. He's like in his late 50s. And he wants to get this. And he's been good his whole life. This is just it was a bad economic time. And he made a mistake. I'm sure you've seen stories like this.
Commonly. But here's one of the first things you take a look at. It's very common that you have a situation where there's partners, and there's a partner that's in charge of the books, and there's a partner in charge of the field operations, and the taxes don't get paid. And one day, the RO, the IRS collector, comes by, and he says, pay up. There's a defense that can get you out of this. if you can prove, now what happens is the IRS says, could you sign checks? You say, yes, that's it. He says, okay, you owe personally. Because even if you're a corporation, it doesn't matter. They'll come after you personally. But there's an exception to that. If you're not the person who made the decision not to pay the taxes, you can walk away from them. It's called a non-responsible party. And a lot of times when we see partnerships with that, the first thing we do is, what was your job in the partnership? And they say, well, I was out in the field and I was paving the roads and in charge of the construction. And my partner was doing the business. And if the partner is the one that didn't pay the taxes and the guy in the field didn't know about it, didn't participate, that is his ticket out of this. It's called non-responsible party. That is very, very powerful.
That makes his partner civilly liable too, I would think, right? And
well, what happens is when the IRS comes in, they just do a broad brush. Everybody's personally liable, pay up.
Right.
It's your job to say, hey, wait. Even though I could sign the checks, I didn't make the decision. I didn't know. It was my bad partner in the office. And you say to them, I'm not personally responsible. And if they agree, fine. If they don't, say, no, Chip, they don't believe you. Then you can go into federal district court. You can even have a jury if you want to. And you say, look, this is not my fault. I shouldn't owe the taxes. Because owing taxes, this is a passion play in my office. I have seen two suicides over this. One of them, the wife kept saying to the husband, you got to do something about the taxes. You got to do about something about taxes. And he said, okay, I'm going to do something today. She came home from work that day. She found them hanging. Mm. That was one. There was another one where the husband also killed himself. And the sad part, these were easy cases to come and fix. There was another one, heartbreaking. Guy came into my office, and he very much loved his wife and his small son. But he owed taxes, and he was going to be the macho man, take it on himself. He didn't want to burden his wife and his kid. So he said to the wife, divorce me. Let's get away from me. And he gave the kid up for adoption. Now, again, this was over a period. Man. This was over a period of time. They didn't want to do it, but he said no for the greater good. And eventually she found somebody else, and the new gentleman married her and adopted the kid. Then he came forward. Okay, it's just me. And Chip, I said to him, but the statute of limitations ran. They couldn't have collected. The guy wept in my office. I could still see that. It was years ago. Sure. I could still see that guy in my chair. There's a passion play. I keep tissues handy because a lot of people break down and cry. It's very emotional. Think about it. You want to feed your kids. You want to pay your mortgage. You want to live your life. And you have some monolith that is going to come and crush you and take everything from you. And maybe put you in federal prison.
And I think so
or
much
state prison.
So much of this is too, it's about those of you starting your own business. I've had my own businesses. You have a lot of pride in it. You know,
sure.
You, the people that work for you, you feel almost like a father figure to many of them. And you really, when something goes bad, and you want to provide for them, you want to help them out. And the IRS is the last person because they don't love you. They don't care about you. And yet they'll go through every veil we've talked about today, you know, from bankruptcy through whatever kind of deal you set up. If you're off just a little bit, they don't seem to care. I think it's prudent advice to let people know when they start a business that the IRS is always going to be the first person with their hand out.
Absolutely. And the thing is, they have way more power. People say, well, wait a minute. Like you said to me earlier, well, don't they need a judgment? No, this is not MasterCard. They don't need to have a judgment and prove to a court. They just come in and they take it. And a lot of times your first notice is your bank account is empty or your paycheck is gone. The bottom line is there's so much in tax that you have to prove that you're innocent. It's not like criminal law where if Chip Franklin is accused of murder, you could sit in the courtroom and say absolutely nothing, not participate. It's the prosecutor's job to prove you're the murderer. Tax? Chip is the guy who said, no, wait. I don't owe these taxes because it's very accusatory, it's invasive, it's intrusive, and you're the one that has to prove that you didn't do wrong. And when you see—
So in other words, they just wipe out the Fifth Amendment in the U.S. Constitution when you go to tax court.
Well, no, tax court's good, but I'm talking about the IRS. They're there to collect. They're there not to discuss with you. It's not like a merchant when you say, look, you know, no, I don't owe you this monthly bill. The IRS guy is, even the language in this stuff is very accusatory. You owe. If you fail to pay, all your assets and income will be taken from you. And if you're in business, they can ruin you because they'll go to your customers and say, don't pay Chip Franklin, pay the IRS. And your customer, well, Chip, you're in trouble. Hey, you're going out of business. We can't be dealing with you. We'll need somebody. It ruins a business.
How do they find your customers?
Very easily. One, if their 1099s file. Or the other thing is, the agent comes and asks, Chip, who are your customers? And they actually ask for the receivables. Give me the name, address, contact information. Now, there's several things you can do. One thing is just give it to them. Or another thing is...
Wait, isn't that ironic that they would go after the people that would be giving you money that they could give to you?
Yes. Welcome to the tax practice. Another thing, suppose you say, you just won't tell them. You're a tough guy. You're not going to tell them. Agent says, okay. Next, you find yourself in front of a federal district judge explaining why you shouldn't be thrown in the clink for contempt for not answering the IRS guy's questions. And if you lie to them, that is a felony. It's called making a false statement. And they prosecute that very vigorously. So the bottom line is, this is not something you fool around with. It's like chest pains. If, God forbid, you got chest pains during this broadcast, you would say, well, I'll wait until we finish the podcast. You would stop and immediately get help. This is serious stuff. Bad things can happen to you.
Does the IRS do a lot of this to get the word of mouth going around that they're bad hombres, that they want to intimidate people to pay taxes, since obviously they can't audit everybody?
You know, one of the things, especially with the criminal program, it's a system of deterrence, because you see somebody else getting crucified and you don't want to be there, much like the movie Spartacus, where slaves were valuable property at that time. Well, if you crucify slaves, you're killing them. It's like throwing away machinery. But they did it to get the other slaves in line. So in the criminal area, it's for deterrence. In the civil area, one of the things I've always found amusing in some of the initial letters where they send them to you and they tell you, you should pay up right away. One of the reasons you should pay up right away is so you won't have to deal with them.
No, that's one of the first sentences. Yeah.
But if you think about it, that's their job, and they're very good at it. They want your stuff, and forget about compassion and all that. They're there to get your money. In fact, Chip, one of the things they'll do is go after your IRA, and then what happens is, so you liquidate your IRA, take part of it to pay them. Now you have to pay income taxes on the IRA money that you took, and if you're under 59.5, a 12.5% penalty, 10 to the feds and 2.5 to the state for taking out because you were less than 59.5.
So if my wife and I file together and we have an IRA together, they'll take her part too.
Absolutely. And not to mention the fact that if you file together, it's what's called jointly and severally liable. So suppose, for example, you and your wife file a return and then you're a bad guy, Chip, and you disappear. Your wife was a housewife. So the first thing she's going to try to do is say she's an innocent spouse to try to get away from this. An innocent spouse, essentially, she had no knowledge and no benefit. But suppose you were supporting her at the time. So they said, well, no, you did have the benefit. And then...
Does she have to prove that she's innocent? In other words, that she had
no
knowledge?
You have to prove everything.
How do you prove you had no knowledge? That's like a double negative.
Well, once again, you do what you can. And then if the IRS says no, you can go into the courts. But here's another thing you have to watch out for. So you're the bad guy. You made the money. So now... Your wife has a job someplace, so they come after her for the taxes you didn't pay. That would be also true if you owed some taxes even before you got married because of community property. Then it's not that she was liable on that debt. They'd still come after her. But suppose you have this situation. Your wife now remarries. She remarries a guy who doesn't owe a penny of taxes. They don't have a prenup. The IRS will come after her husband, too. To pay the taxes that Chip didn't pay, husband number one, not because he's liable on the debt. If he divorced her, he wouldn't be liable anymore, because of California community property. Half of his earnings belongs to the spouse she owes. And that really happens. Let me tell you, you know, there's all kinds of emotions in my office. You know, I was a CPA before I was a tax attorney. It's not the dry filling out the forms. This is a passion play. People come in with all types of stuff. Husband number two is usually not so happy to have his earnings grabbed, because ex-husband number one didn't pay, and it's a real passion play. These are people's lives. People do things, and a lot of times they'll do very harmful things. I one time represented a gentleman who embezzled from his company, and the reason he embezzled from his company was to pay the IRS. And I said, but you can go to state prison for this. And he was. I mean, people will go to extremes, not to mention all the illegal underground stuff they do. And I say, wait, stop. This doesn't have to be. But people don't realize. And a lot of people are afraid. And on the other side, there's a lot of people that imagine that much worse is going to happen to them than if we fix the problem. It's kind of like if you have an ache or a pain and you go on the internet and you look at one of those medical websites and you diagnose you have some horrible disease that is going to kill you. But first, you're going to suffer a lot. And you go to the doctor and say, you don't have that. You'll be better in a few days.
To hear more podcasts, go to lifedeathandtaxes.org.